And welcome back.
Welcome back indeed. We're here in the studio with Stephen Lowe, Communications Coordinator for Communities for a Better Environment. And we're so excited to have you here today.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
How was your trip over?
Very smooth.
Nice.
Party trip.
Yeah, I like a nice party trip. That's one of the joys of public transportation is, I don't know if you probably did the phone thing. It used to be that people did the book thing. You know, you just get to relax a bit.
I'm a little conflicted. I actually resisted joining a green connected to the Matrix. I didn't have any cell phone for like 2 years.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then I rolled with just a flip phone for like 5 years, still resisting the Matrix, but this is my first iPhone, so I feel a little guilty.
Yeah.
Put my head down and thumb is mashing away.
It's gotten to the point where if I see someone with a book, I'm like, old school, dude, what's up? High five. Yeah. So I know. I'm in the Matrix, too. I haven't questioned my own... And it's so convenient. Like, once I was like, maybe this is convenient, and then I got it, I was like, this is super convenient, and that was maybe it wasn't even that long ago. It was definitely less than two years ago. Who knows? But, it's not an iPhone, but I do enjoy them. I'm glad you enjoyed your ride.
Yes. Well, I think it's... within the realm of possibility, very much within the realm of possibility, 10 years from now, we're going to have eye contact lenses.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I have enough trouble with my regular contact lenses.
Well, we enjoy size in unison. I think that's one of our trademarks, really.
There's a lot to sigh about in this world.
A lot to sigh about.
Maybe things... Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was saying maybe the pendulum will swing back and we'll just be like humans again and we'll interact with each other without machines.
That's true. And if we have time, we could go all technological on this interview and just discuss. We can discuss Google Glass Lady and the whole bit.
Oh.
But
I'd like to hear about this organization.
I'd like to too.
And the environment, since the environment's the most important thing there is.
Yes, we agree. We are in agreement. I work at an environmental justice nonprofit called Communities for a Better Environment. And so what we do, I'll start with our mission statement and then kind of break it down from there. So our mission statement
is CBE, our acronym, is to build people's power in California's communities of color and low-income communities to achieve environmental health and justice by preventing and reducing pollution and building green and sustainable communities. So for those in the audience, of your audience, who are not familiar with the term environmental justice, also known as EJ, I like how the U.S. Attorney General talked about it, Eric Holder. This is back in 2011. He said, regarding EJ, today, poor families of color are more likely to have a landfill proposed in their community. Their neighborhoods are more likely to have polluted water and soil. Their children are more likely to breathe polluted air and suffer from asthma. In 2011, and also today, the burden of environmental degradation still falls disproportionately on low-income communities and communities of color, and most often on their youngest residents, our children. So to put it another way, EJ is the right of all communities to live in a healthy environment. And right now, low-income communities and low-income communities of color are being denied that right.
Well, yay, Eric Holder. I like that guy. This is the first time we've gotten to reference him on the show. And... So, let's see, how long have you been with CBE?
I've been with CBE off and on for the past 7 years. Started off as a lowly office manager, ordering pencils and changing toner in the copier.
And actually, I'm still doing that.
Yeah.
But I was also doing this other stuff.
I was going to say, you've worked your way out. Like, that's the way nonprofits work. Like, and it doesn't matter if you're the executive director. You're probably going to have to, like, I don't know, organize the pencils at some point.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if you would totally stop doing that altogether, I would have been like, what? Really?
Yeah.
CVE, that's so crazy. But what kind of stuff are you doing as an organization there? I know you've got a couple of different projects, specific projects that you're working on in Oakland and Richmond.
Well, let me just start with the most prescient. Let me just back up real quick. We work, CBE works, we have an office in Oakland, and we have work locally in Richmond and in East Oakland, and then we also have our headquarters is in Huntington Park in Southern California, and we have a number of important campaigns down there. So we work locally, regionally, and statewide. And as I said, start with the most pressing right now, especially for San Francisco listeners. There are at least right now 5 proposals being floated by Bay Area oil refineries to import and then refine dirtier crude oil. Mm-hmm. And so for our listeners who are not familiar with this ongoing debate, I'm sure many people have heard about the ongoing fight with the XL pipeline. And you've heard about, you know, tar sands, a term thrown about in the media a lot. Heard about there's been a lot of news about the derailments, especially the one in Lake Megantic, the horrible explosion that killed 47 people because of the train derailed carrying Bakken crude. So you have all these different terms: Bakken crude, tar sands. And so, like crude oil 101, basically, crude oil obviously is a fossil fuel, and the quality of crude oil, and keep in mind, all fossil fuels are dirty because of the extraction and refining process and so on and so forth. But crude oil runs, as far as its quality, runs on a spectrum. So you have the cleanest, relatively cleanest, or the least dirty crude oil, and some of that comes from, for example, from Saudi Arabia. You go all the way to the other end of the spectrum, to the dirtiest crude oil, and tar sands would be a really good example of that. And so what we're talking about when we talk about dirty crude oil, 2 major problems. 1, refinement, processing of it. The second major problem, transport. So refinement. It's harder to refine dirtier crude oil. As the crude oil becomes dirtier, it's harder to refine. What does that mean? It means more energy to process and more impurities to take out of it. So that means more air pollution coming out of the refineries. The other problem with the refinement of this dirtier crude oil is that it's more corrosive. So in 2011, or I'm sorry, 2012, as much more recent history, the Richmond oil refinery blew up, exploded, caught fire. Federal investigators pointed to one of the major causes of that was dirty crude oil. You had corrosive crude oil running to the refinery, finally wore down. The portion of the refinery that gave out exploded, and so dirty crude oil, it means much more hazardous working conditions for refinery workers because eating away at the innards of a refinery. 2, transport of dirty crude. I already mentioned Lake Megantic. Transporting this crude is highly hazardous. This morning, it was reported that Earth Justice, along with CBE and other groups, filed a lawsuit against an energy company called Kinder Morgan.
Woohoo!
Yes. So very naughty people. And the lawsuit is also against the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. That's a lot of words to say our local air quality regulators. And it's once again a case of the fox guarding the hen house. They basically rubber stamped this permit for Kinder Morgan to bring in, they've been bringing in for the past 6 months apparently, dirty crude, explosive crude, the type that was being transported in Lake Megantic, and it's been coming into Richmond. So we're suing Kinder Morgan and air quality regulators to stop this project immediately.
Excellent.
Yes.
And thank you for Crude Oil 101, by the way.
Yeah.
I needed to take that class.
Definitely. I mean, it's something that we hear a lot about but don't know the specifics of.
Right.
So, like,
right.
I know which side I'm on, but I wouldn't necessarily be able to debate it clearly.
Right, right. Yeah, the thing that gets missed the most, I think, in the media is that it is more corrosive. So refineries plans to bring in more crude manifests, you're going to have the chances, very good chances, of more explosions like we saw in 2012 mm-hmm. At the Chevron refinery. Obviously, as you saw in the news, 15,000 people sought medical attention because of that. 19 workers narrowly escaped with their lives from that explosion. So, yeah.
I'm wondering, are there any folks who have worked for Chevron or these companies who have then gone on to, like, sue the companies after, like, damages just from working there?
I assume there have. I don't have. I'm not. You'd have to ask one of our lawyers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's in all likelihood probably yes.
Yeah.
Their management practices and their safety practices is rather wanting, as
I would
as
imagine.
We see, as we saw in 2012. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the prognosis for your lawsuit? It's very early, I know, but is there any more details or plans or any? Or are we? I'm just excited that you guys are going for it because I don't like foxes guarding hen houses.
Yes. We just filed the lawsuit, so it's a little early to tell. I think we have a very good chance because the Bay Area Management District, Air Quality Management District, did. It's pretty egregious. They're saying that there's not going to be, you know, when you have these projects that have the potential for major environmental impact and impact on human health, by law you have to have some kind of public process where the project is vetted, where the public gains access to data, saying, okay, this is the potential chemicals impacts. And how it's going to harm, if at all, human health. So our quote unquote air regulators just said, oh, we don't need that. Rubber stamp. There you go. Mm. Bring that stuff in.
Not good. Oh,
go
that was
wild. Yeah.
Actually, that could have been a sign unison there. That's not good.
Yeah. Yes.
So that is the most pressing thing we wanted to get into this. And by the way, what's your process? So you're attacking via lawsuits. I know you also do organizing, get the community members involved directly.
Yeah. So we've been working in Richmond for about 20 years, and obviously a lot of the work has been around trying to mitigate the pollution from the Chevron refineries, the biggest polluter in Richmond, and a San Francisco Chronicle article recently described the relationship between Richmond and the Chevron refinery as akin to a bad marriage.
Mm.
So if we're going to go, if we're going to roll with that image, it's been an abusive marriage.
Yes. Oh yeah.
With one of the with the abusive spouse also dumping garbage into the air for the entire Bay Area to breathe. And the Richmond Refinery has had a long history of pollution violations, safety violations. Those safety violations culminating in three separate major incidences, one in 99, major fire and explosion, fire in 2007, and of course the 2012 fire and explosion. And in relation to the 2012 explosion, Chevron settled criminal charges, paying $2 million to the state and Contra Costa attorney generals. Because of the fire. And the when federal investigators went to investigate the fire, see what the causes were, it wasn't just the type of crude, dirty crude that was being run through the refinery. Refinery workers have been warning Chevron management, you have a problem here, safety problem here with this dirty crude. And Chevron chose to ignore upgrade the equipment. They just let it run to failure.
Textbook bad spouse.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Can we kick out this spouse? I mean, I understand that Chevron does provide a lot of jobs, so there's that.
Sure.
But how do we get them out?
For right now, we just have to play play ball and work through local governments and regulators to try to mitigate the refinery emissions. The other issue is there are of course a lot of union jobs that are being provided by the refinery. The caveat there also is that they provide a lot of jobs. Unfortunately, only 7%, probably less than that, are being provided to Richmond residents.
Mm.
So basically, everyone's coming in from out of town.
Oh no!
To work.
What areas is it pulling from?
Probably around Contra Costa, around the Bay Area.
Okay.
Yeah, but you hear a lot from Chevron's PR. We care about the community. We love the community. We're your next door neighbor. Come over and ask us for a cup of sugar. Blah blah blah.
Yeah.
We want to provide jobs to the community. Well, you're not doing a very good job. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think Shell is like up close to Vallejo, I want to say.
Yeah.
I remember I was biking up there once, and there's a road I was looking for called Shell Mound Road.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, that sounds pretty, Shell Road. I'm like, that sounds pretty. And then I get up there, and it's for Shell, the company, and I was like very disappointed
that
it wasn't seashells.
Yeah. And did you smell anything funky?
I tried to bike out of there as fast as I could.
Probably wise.
Yeah. Well, it's so difficult when so many people rely on it for their livelihood, yet the company does a lot of negative things. You know, it's kind of catch 22. Like how do we get past it?
Right. I think that's a good segue for a much happier topic.
Yay!
Global warming.
Oh.
Yes. So the UN climate chief recently observed, I believe, last month that. She observed that because of the rather strange weather across the globe, that we are experiencing global warming. Global warming is here. We've stepped over the threshold. Here we are. And I don't think that's terribly epiphanal. We see the extreme heat in Australia, flooding in England, our own flooding in this state, and so. Many scientists have linked global warming to the increasing frequency of extreme weather, increase in storms and the severity of storms, and so a long route to your to answer your question. We basically, when it comes to global warming, our economy and our society has basically, generally speaking, two roads that we can take. After the first road that we've been taking, stay plugged in to the oil fossil fuel industry and infrastructure. And for activists and groups like CBE, that means continue to be reactive, reacting to whenever polluters violate laws or whenever, due to their negligence, their facilities blow up or run to failure. And I think we don't have to exercise our imaginations too much to see what the end of the road for that is. You know, I watch The Walking Dead very closely, and the end is not pretty at all. All kidding aside, so the other road is to do the exact opposite: unplug our economy, our society from the fossil fuel industry and infrastructure, and continue building momentum to transition to a green economy where sustainable energy renews our communities, and continue building investment in sustainable energy that will create green careers, build up a green job sector. And for our part, CBE, we're contributing to that momentum, to building them up, that momentum in California. We have a number of programs to build up this transition. One in LA, we have a program to increase accessibility for rooftop solar for low-income communities, so they can have access, cheaper access to solar panels. In Richmond and in Marin, they have something called community choice aggregation, and for Richmond, it's the first a majority community of color in the nation that has access to this. Basically, what it is each household in that city has a choice of having up to 100% of their electricity being supplied from renewable energy. Mm. And instead of getting their energy from PG&E, which has a pretty weak renewable portfolio for households. The vision for that obviously is to bring that statewide for as many cities as possible in California. Another statewide program, Charge Ahead, and this is in coalition with a number of other environmental groups, basically make consumer incentives more attractive to consumers, to the point where we have 1 million electric vehicles on the road in the next 10 years. Mm. So obviously two benefits: we build up the renewable energy infrastructure and reduce air pollution. And of course, on the local level, we are, you know, oftentimes we're in an adversarial role with local governments, and in this case, with this program, we're working with local municipalities to create green economic zones. This is in both Southern California. So passing local ordinances where new polluting industries are blocked, and we attract green businesses. And also part of that is to make urban areas more friendly to urban agriculture. Mm. Specifically in Oakland, we're working with the city council to repurpose blighted properties, properties that are sitting there. We have negligent homeowners, and to repurpose that land to be used for urban farming, urban agriculture.
Awesome.
We love urban agriculture.
Yeah. We had a guest in here a couple weeks ago, Kelly from Acton on Verba.
Yeah.
And it was awesome hearing about what they're working on in Oakland.
She's most uprighteously dope.
Yes.
I'm trying to stay in tune with the lingo. She was after Nonverba was voted best one of the best nonprofits in on the West Coast.
Awesome.
Recently.
Yeah, that's great.
Farming magazine or a magazine.
And a quick question for you. If you had, I don't know if Kelly asked you at any point if you had any ideas for what to call a flock of urban bees, but she is still looking for a name for her bees. So we're trying to help her find a name. She was going to go with gladiators and then decided it was too militaristic. So we can help Kelly find a name for those bees.
Yeah.
The funky buzz.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I like that.
I live in a co-op in Berkeley. One of my roommates does beekeeping, so we have.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we have a. We get once a year. We get a huge harvest of honey from our backyard. It's pretty. It's pretty nice.
Awesome.
That is excellent. I didn't know it only worked once a year, but. That's kind of disappointing, but also awesome.
Well, it lasts a while.
Yeah.
I think she was saying that they'd gotten like 3 gallons worth of honey from the bees. So
yeah,
that can last.
How are your bees doing? Let's compete. Let's throw down.
Oh, it doesn't have to be a competition.
No, it doesn't have to be a competition.
They seem to be doing okay. My roommate is slowly adding on, building up the hive. She's a real badass, Kim, if you're listening. I think the second day I was part of this co-op, I moved in, and she's like, oh, let me show you the, beehive. So I'm like, okay, do I need, like, a beehive, equipment thing? And it's like, no, so I'm, like, standing far away, and she's like, ambles up to the beehive, nothing, just no protection, la 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 la, puts her hand in there, do do do. Yeah.
Oh.
And so she sometimes she goes hunting around the neighborhood. So like beehives will sometimes be stuck up in a tree. They won't have like an actual hive, they'll just be like a swarm, a big ball of bees. And so she'll go up to the tree, climb the tree, cut this big ball of bees, and let it drop into a box is how I understand the process there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Kim is a badass.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
That's
totally.
You can quote me on that.
Yeah, I'm quoting you on that.
So.
Well, what else is going on with CBE at the moment?
So we have the. We have the dirty crude, unfortunately, coming in through the East Bay. Let me talk about some more about Richmond, and then I'll move on to Oakland. So the other part of the dirty crude story is that the Richmond refinery. Has a proposal to expand their operations, and if you look in the news, they call it, you know, language is important. They call it a modernization. Let us translate Chevron speak. Okay, modernization means expanding the refinery, locking the refinery in, so that in the long term it's going to refine dirtier crude. So that's what quote unquote modernization means, and so we've been working with residents and refinery workers to make sure and putting pressure on air quality officials to make sure that quote unquote modernization means upgrading existing equipment, installing the safest technology possible, so we have less pollution, yay. And safer working conditions for refinery workers. That's going on, and you can go to our website cbecal.org to find out more about that. And just to make it more explicit, obviously, for San Francisco listeners, the dirty crude issue in Chevron, unfortunately, has the potential to affect the health of not only San Francisco, but the entire Bay Area with the increased emissions, but also as you have these, if you start having these trains carrying this explosive crude, these train tracks go through many cities in the East Bay. So, and these train tracks, some of them run parallel to water sources. They're running right in the middle of residential areas. So, very dangerous proposal. In Oakland, we have a proposal right now by a company called the Neptune Society. And you hear that name, like, what is that? Is that ice cream? What is that?
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. Ash-flavored ice cream. Ugh. Yummy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what these folks are, they run a crematoriums, basically. They have a proposal to build a Walmart-sized crematorium in East Oakland that'll built to burn up to 3,000 bodies annually. So burning... cremating bodies also means you're going to be emitting lead and mercury. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I should talk about later is the idea of cumulative impact as a concept particular to environmental justice. But basically, East Oakland is already over-inundated with other polluting industries, other pollution sources. One of the main ones is diesel trucks. We have a lot of diesel trucks driving through East Oakland, and so that brings in a lot of particulate matter, which is a kind of pollution. Very tiny particles get lodged deep within your lungs and causes a lot of respiratory illnesses and sudden death in some cases. East Oakland also has a high crime rate, high unemployment. USDA has pointed to East Oakland as a food desert. Mm-hmm. So very hard to, very inconvenient to have access to healthy food.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all these, in what the public health realm they call social stressors. And so they want to add a crematorium to the mix here. And so the particulars of this story is that the Oakland Planning Department, once again another fox in the hen house, rubber stamped the building permit for Neptune Society, for this crematorium, denying residents the right to, once again, a public process to vet this proposal, know what exactly is going. What they're going to be exposed to in terms of emissions. April 29th at 5 o'clock, we are encouraging everyone this side of the Mississippi to, that's a Tuesday, to go to Oakland City Hall.
Mm.
And there's a settlement right now where we can end this little problem and have the City of Oakland sign off on a settlement with Neptune Society, and we want to make sure there's a lot of people there to pressure the Oakland City Council to sign off on the settlement.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And I wanted to let you know we only have about 5 minutes more for the interview, so if you'd like to go, I'd love to hear about cumulative impact, if you want to go ahead and go into that.
Sure, sure. Cumulative impacts is a key concept when we're talking about environmental justice. And moving to those notes there. So stepping back a bit, pollution, of course, this might sound very simplistic. Obviously, pollution is more than just having a bad smell in the air or look, that black plume of smoke looks pretty ugly against the skyline. There's almost always a negative health consequence when you're talking about pollution, toxic emissions, either in the air or water or otherwise. And so this is where environmental justice sort of links up with the public health discipline. And in public health, they talk about often that place, the place you live in, matters. Place matters. The resources you have that determine where you live in an area. So place matters because it determines if you're going to be living next to a power plant or oil refinery. And so when we're talking about pollution, we're not just talking about, okay, Chevron just emitted dioxin, for example, for an hour, and now they stopped. And so now I'm safe. Mm. No, if you're living in Richmond, if you're living in East Oakland, or in Vernon, California, where they have a battery recycler emitting lead and arsenic into the air, this is your home. This is where your family lives. This is where your friends live for years and years. So you're day in and day out, you're continuously breathing in, being exposed to these pollutants. A lot of these pollutants are fat soluble. Okay, so that means it gets lodged in your body. You can't sweat it out. You can't piss or shit it out. It gets lodged in your body, and it builds up over the years.
Is it just stuck there forever for a lot of these things?
A lot of them are. Not forever.
Like
I mean, it's very, very slow sort of excretion process.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it's just, over the years, it just builds up in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so place matters also because it determines if you have access to healthy food. If you're living in Richmond, East Oakland, Hunters Bay Point, you're living in what's called a food desert. So for example, in East Oakland, you're driving at least 20 minutes to get to a grocery store to buy food. I'm just not talking about getting organic food.
Yeah.
It's any kind of grocery store. I mean, in Berkeley, I'm within 2 miles of at least 7 grocery stores, 3 of which have a larger organic food selection. So place matters as far as access to healthy food. Place matters because are you living in a safe neighborhood? Are you always constantly stressed because you think you're going to get mugged when you walk home from work? Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned, all these sort of social stressors, they add up, they accumulate in the body, they break down the body, break down your immune system, making you more vulnerable to infectious disease, major chronic disease, stroke, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, neurological disruption. And in the long term, what we're talking about is short lifespan compared to, say, if you were living in Piedmont or in Marin. You're talking about 2 to 10 years of your life chopped off there. This is exactly what we're talking about and this is exactly why we're organizing in communities like East Oakland, Richmond, Huntington Park, Vernon in Southern California. Yeah.
Taking those communities and making and because they're so directly impacted, they're fighting for a better environment for everyone. So.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yay. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you very much.
Sure, absolutely. Like I said, you can go to our website, cbecal.org, to find out more information. We also have an opportunity through the website to offer a donation. Unfortunately, we do not have the unlimited pockets of Chevron and other polluters.
Not yet.
Not yet. Not yet.
Yes.
In the meantime, yes, we rely almost completely on the generosity of the public. So the more you can give, the more effective we are at helping to protect environmental health.
Awesome. Well, thank you for protecting all of us.
Yes. Thank you.
No problem.
You're welcome. Although I have to say, I was told that you were going to wear a pirate costume.
Yeah, I was told that too. I didn't recognize you when you came in. I'm like, that could be him, but he's not dressed like a pirate.
I had it sent to the cleaners, and they still have it. They're so slow cleaning it up.
I will say, I love your shirt, and your shirt is black and yellow, which is the color of the Pittsburgh Pirates. So that works, and it's an awesome. It's a sign that says "Danger, Police in Area," and it has a police officer with a gun aimed at a person with their hands in the air.
It's not a CB uniform, just my own uniform. My entire wardrobe is like political T-shirts.
Awesome! Yeah. I love that.
I love a good political T-shirt. I have one that I invested in college and often wear. It's my one political T-shirt.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. And look